From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The Emmys last night had their surprises. Breaking Bad's Bryan Cranston went home empty-handed, though the show did win Best Drama, and many fans of the show no doubt switched over to MIC for the next to the last episode at 9 p.m. Emmys still underway. Jeff Daniels, Best Actor for The Newsroom, surprise. Modern Family won Best Comedy for the fourth time. Veep got some love. It was all against a backdrop of a radically changing and changed TV industry. Viewers plowing through entire series in one sitting. Spoiler risks lasting months, years, as audiences go their own ways on their own devices. This hour On Point, the Emmys, a new season, whatever that means now, and a new day in television. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Were you cheering, booing last night? How have your television tastes and viewing habits changed? What do you want now from TV, whatever exactly TV means? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here we were right off the bat last night. Neil Patrick Harris, best known as Barney Stinson on How I Met Your Mother, hosting the Emmys, opening the show with a crack about the changing TV industry.
Welcome to the 65th Primetime Emmy Awards. Tonight we celebrate the best of television. For our younger audience, that's the thing you watch on your phones.
And then right away, a whole bunch of previous hosts out there and Conan O'Brien playing the curmudgeon about all the changes that have taken place, this internet thing.
The year was 2002. Back then, an Emmy broadcast was watched by over 900 billion people. Those were simpler times. There was no Honey Bee Boo. People had plenty of storage, and they didn't fight wars over it. And there was no internet. You had to pay for pornography. Yes. Those were the days, I tell you. Back then, a host was a god.
Then a host was a god, and just a little bit from Bryan Cranston, plays Walter White, of course, on AMC's Breaking Bad. He talked about his character in that show and the Emmy-winning shows to Access Hollywood's Billy Bush.
What's so interesting about Breaking Bad is that it doesn't paint in bold pictures. It paints in colors that are textured and grays. So a man who does evil things can also truly be loving and nurturing and tender to a child.
Yes.
But it's new for audiences to experience that. We think that someone should wear a black hat or a white hat. A good bad guy or a bad guy. And that's just not the way the world is.
Black hat, white hat days are all done. TV is changing. We saw some of that last night. And on whatever device you view, you can see a whole lot more any time of day or night. Joining us now from New York is Willa Paskin, Slate's TV critic. Willa, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And from New York, Brooklyn, James Poniewozik is here, TV critic for Time Magazine, author of Time's Tuned In blog on pop culture and society. Jim, welcome back to On Point. Wonderful to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me back.
So we want to look at all the changes, but Willa, and I know there's all these misgivings about the new season, but what does a new season even mean anymore? What about the show last night, Willa? Who won, who didn't, what you thought of who's getting awarded in television these days, Willa?
Last night's show was, I think it was actually pretty weird for an award show. Usually award shows, everyone gets really excited. They want to watch them. They want to see what everyone's wearing. And then they get, you know, eventually very boring. I didn't think last night's show was that boring, but I thought it got really, really strange. The awards were sort of distributed to a bunch of people we weren't expecting to win. The first two awards of the night, to Merritt Weaver, who's on Nurse Jackie, and Tony Hale, who's on Veep, were really surprising. And then things got stranger. I mean, Jeff Daniels beating Bryan Cranston is kind of a really shocking and sort of preposterous thing to have happened. But then there was a lot of segments on the show that were really strange. You know, there's Elton John doing a song that's in honor of Liberace, sort of loosely tied to Behind the Candelabra.
Yeah.
There's JFK. There was a whole, like, homage to JFK's death that somehow had Carrie Underwood singing a Beatles song. There was a long choreographed number where there was a mix-up of Get Lucky, like a mashup of Get Lucky and the theme song to Breaking Bad. You know, that's... That's sort of like surreal dream stuff. So I thought it wasn't a great show, I don't think, but it did hold my attention.
Jim, what about the lineup of winners and losers last night?
Well, I should note that I actually did what you know, most good God-fearing Americans should have done last night and switched off the Emmys at 9 p.m. to watch Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
On the theory that I'd rather watch an Emmy being earned than being collected. From what I speeded through catching up on, I agree with Will about the show generally. One thing that I thought is sort of interesting about the collections of awards that were given out, and you know, it's always a mishmash. It looks like for a while there are a couple of surprises, and it looks like everything's going to be changing, and then some usual suspects win again, and it looks like things aren't changing so much at all, and it tends to be sort of a grab bag. But you know, I think like everybody, kind of interested to see how Netflix, particularly House of Cards, would do its first season, simply because that's been such a big story in the TV business. It picked up Best Director for David Fincher, but not a lot otherwise. And it was just sort of interesting to me from that standpoint, seeing how the dynamic has shifted to where, you know, Netflix is maybe sort of in the position that, you know, the pay cable networks like HBO were, you know, a decade or more ago, which is that, you know, back then it was, would the gatekeepers acknowledge this new distribution method of TV over broadcast? And now cable is sort of in the position that broadcast was back, you know, now it's an establishment thing for, you know, these smaller audience cable shows to collect Emmys, and it's Netflix that's working its way in.
Can you explain, either of you, how the Academy works on this? I mean, Willie, you were saying people were surprised, including Jeff Daniels himself, that he won Best Actor in a Drama Series. A lot of people were looking at Bryan Cranston, the lead, of course, in Breaking Bad there. I mean, what's the makeup of the voting, what is it, the Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, that it would come up with that kind of choice here, Willa?
Well, Bryan Cranston has won a number of years in the past when people cared a lot less about Breaking Bad and watched it a lot less often. So that's one of the mystifying elements there. You know, I don't actually know particularly what the makeup of the Emmy voters is. The cliche about almost all awards voters of every kind for the Oscars as well is, you know, that they're old and they have sort of staid tastes. But I think in the last couple years, just even with the nominations, you've sort of seen that change, whether it just means that older people are also watching great TV as TV, you know, gets better. But, I mean, the nominations have not just been for things that are on the networks at all. And obviously the winners weren't that way at all either. I mean, I sort of think about Emmy voters as just each having their own idiosyncratic, weird TV taste like every other person. And you can sort of see that in what wins, which is, you know, Merritt Weaver, for example, winning is great. I wouldn't have predicted that Laura Linney on The Big C would win either. I didn't know that many people were still watching that show. But clearly, like, that spoke to some Emmy viewers. And I would love to, you know, have a drink with them and hear about what they liked and what they didn't like. But, I mean, I think that it's just that there's so much TV that everybody sort of is cobbling together their own diet.
Yeah, Jim, I mean, I don't get to nurse Jackie often. I don't get to much often prepping for this show every night, but I see Veep sometimes and get a big laugh out of it. Tony Hale was sort of the surprise there and supporting actor in a comedy series for taking that. What do you see in the way these choices are made and who's making them? Do they reflect the change in the whole industry that the country's in the middle of?
You know, they do, but it takes some time. I mean, you know, to add to what Willa said about the stereotype of Emmy and other voters being sort of old and out of touch, another thing is that, you know, the Academy and academies in general tend to be made up, well, they are made up of people who work in the business, who have worked in that business for a long time, and there is a tendency to reward the kind of shows that those people came up in their own careers making, which is why, you know, sometimes, not always, the Academy can be sort of hesitant to reward a new phenomenon as it starts to emerge. You know, hence the fact that the Sopranos is going to be looked at, you know, decades from now as one of the most seminal programs ever, and yet there was a span when it lost year after year after year to The West Wing, you know, probably partly because it was being voted on by people who, you know, thought of broadcast TV as real TV and thought of, you know, a pay cable show winning as being kind of cheating. So, you know, I think there's an element of that. The somewhat baffling to me, Jeff Daniels win, although, you know, I think he does fairly good work in a show that I'm not that crazy about. could have been there may have been a bit of vote splitting in there too, because I think you had the pull of Kevin Spacey, who also has the movie actor deigning to do television thing working for him.
Right.
So maybe he drew off a bit of the Cranston and Hampa, but I'm not enough of a psychic to totally answer that.
I mean, we just got a few minutes before the break, Willa, but also this kind of odd tension of people talking about and critics, people on the stage, about a golden age of television, and that yet when we look out at the new fall season, kind of an old construction but still with us, you've got almost universal moaning, weeping, and gnashing of teeth about mediocrity, yourself included, Willa.
Yes, I'm doing a lot of caterwauling about the new fall season. It is very bad, the new fall season. I mean, I think a lot of that is just sort of coincidence. Some seasons are better than others. And truthfully, an entire fall season can be much better if there's just even one or two or three pilots that are really, really good. It makes you think that they're capable of making good stuff. But, this year, I think because there's so much good stuff on cable, too, it all looks a lot worse.
Australopithecus would really have been sick of us debating how we're here. They're catching deer.
We're catching viruses.
Religion or astronomy.
Descartes or Deuteronomy.
It all started with the Big Bang.
Music and mythology.
Einstein and astrology. It all started with the Big Bang.
It all started with the Big Bang.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Emmys and where television is headed. The new season, the new ways of looking at everything, the new rhythm of television these days. James Poniewozik is with us, TV critic for Time magazine, joins us from New York. Willa Paskin also joins us from New York, a Slate's television critic. Good eyes on a rapidly changing landscape that was celebrated last night by whoever showed up. There's a lot else going on, including Breaking Bad itself. It's next to the last episode. You want to know what the sort of feel of last night was? Well, here's a little bit of it. This was Tina Fey and Amy Poehler having fun in the audience with 3D glasses on and heckling the Emmy host Neil Patrick Harris. You'll hear Fey and Poehler first, then Harris.
Take your pants off. Take your pants off.
And twerk it.
Yeah. Work that twerk.
I come to award shows for the twerking.
No, stop. No.
Twerk it.
I am not twerking. I'm not going to do that. That would be degrading.
Yeah, it might be degrading, but we would be degrateful.
Degrateful. Neil Patrick Harris, of course, talking about all the new technology, kind of getting lost in it up on stage.
These are remarkable times for television. The content has never been more varied. The viewing has never been more easier. You can now watch TV on your TV, on your laptop, on your mobile device, you can go on your watch. You can go on the Google Glass. You can... Matter of fact, right now I'm actually watching an episode of American Horror Story Asylum on my contact lenses. This past year... Mom! Sorry. Pause. Pause. Got it. Sorry.
Lost in the technology there. And here's... Breaking Bad took the Emmy for Best Drama last night, and creator of the show, Vince Gilligan, said he was shocked, but talked about the golden age of television here.
Holy crap. Man, I did not see this coming. I thought this was going to be House of Cards. Or it could have been Homeland, or it could have been Mad Men, or it could have been Game of Thrones, or Downton Abbey. Could have been any of them, and even some others that were not nominated in this golden age of television that we feel so proud to be a part of.
Willa, golden age of television, whence comes that moniker? You hear it bandied around a lot in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it basically starts with The Sopranos. So the idea is that there, with The Sopranos, was a whole sort of new way of doing kind of television that was ethically complex, usually around an anti-hero, sort of masculine hierarchies, really beautiful set design. And there's a number of shows that – so The Sopranos and The Wire basically for HBO, and then Mad Men and Breaking Bad are sort of the four preeminent ones. But there's a lot of shows that sort of are in that mode, Boardwalk Empire or Justified or Game of Thrones. I mean, all of them have these themes. So that's sort of that's the idea. That's what people are sort of talking about when they say the golden age of television. I think what's sort of great and interesting about Breaking Bad both being as good as it is and ending is that, there's certain cliches of golden age shows that are stolen from The Sopranos and sort of about these bad guys that are really cliches at this point. They're sort of boring. You know, there's going to be a lot of violence. There's going to be a lot of violence. There's going to be the lead guy is going to be tortured, and you're going to kind of like him even though he's a terrible person, and you're going to have to sort of grapple with that. Often it'll be a period show. And there's lots of other really interesting themes and questions that can be explored. And there's sort of shows, I think, like a little bit like Boardwalk, about Stars has a show called Magic City that you can almost see are cookie cutter models of shows like The Sopranos and The Wire and Breaking Bad and Mad Men. And they're not nearly as good. And they're just sort of or Ray Donovan is another one that's on Showtime. You know, they're very they take these themes and they think it's going to just having the themes is going to be make them as good as those other shows. And it's really nice to see. You know, as Breaking Bad ends, and maybe the Golden Age in this very specific sense sort of ends, we might have a broader range of shows about much more different and interesting things than just super violence.
You know, Jim, back in the day when it was just the networks and you watched what they offered and you watched it in the order that they offered it, when they offered it, I mean, now you can have a Golden Age of television and all this weeping and wailing about a schlocky, mediocre season coming up at the same time, Jim.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because, you know, for one thing, the Emmys is sort of an artifact of a day when there were three networks of television and they would unload all of your new television, you know, the third week in September, and the Emmys would happen just before that official television season began. You know, and it was like going back to school and these are what your new programs were going to be. Now, that concept of a season is more and more archaic. You know, number one, in television itself, even on the broadcast networks and certainly on cable, the introduction of new shows is much more around the clock. And now, with the rise of streaming television, the notion of a calendar and a schedule is to some extent going out the window. You know, a show like Orange is the New Black, you know, might be released on a certain date, but what's the season for that? You might watch it over a weekend. You might watch it over two or three months. People will have a very, very different experience of it. And so I think that also gives rise to part of that dissonance that they were just talking about critics like Willa and I moaning about the fall season amidst, you know, the quote-unquote golden age of television, because to me, the contradiction that we have is that there's a new fall season of broadcast TV shows about to premiere, and they are generally pretty mediocre from what I've seen so far. And yet, if I were looking at this year of television, like the calendar year, it's, you know, a really strong year of TV overall. Just, you know, looking back to, you know, early in the year and newer shows like The Americans and Orange is the New Black and the new season of Arrested Development and, you know, things like Game of Thrones on HBO. There have just been a fantastic complement of new and returning shows. They're not generally on broadcast TV, and they're not part of that, you know, still vestigial fall TV season that we're still conditioned to welcome every fall.
Willa, I mean, it's become difficult to even talk about TV in some ways because it's not chronological. People watching everything all kinds of times. I mean, you can be a spoiler a decade after something came out. People still watching The Sopranos.
Well, I think you cannot be a spoiler 10 years after a show ends. I mean, spoil it for someone. You may spoil it for someone, but...
I can just interrupt, I will say this morning I got called out in a Breaking Bad review I wrote for referencing a plot point in The Shield, a show that went off the air 5 or 6 years ago. So, you know, people have definitely been conditioned to have that expectation now, whether they should or not. You know,
well, Jim, was it you who said that the aftermath of these shows is becoming more like book clubs and less like what it used to be, where everybody watched, everybody went to work and talked about it? Now you talk about it once you've read it, and you have to select the group you're going to speak about it with, so they're in the same boat.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think there are good and bad things about that, but definitely as viewers have more power and discretion over how and when they watch shows, whether it's because of Netflix or because of your TiVo or because of DVDs or iTunes or whatever, there isn't the same conversation where, you know, a program aired at one time every week, everybody watched it, and then everybody would be on the same page and you'd talk about it. It becomes something that is a little more about finding, selecting groups and finding places to develop the conversation so that, you know, again, with a show like Orange is the New Black, mm-hmm. You could sort of see the cultural conversation around that kind of rise and build organically, kind of the way that one, you know, that it would around, say, a great new book that came out as more and more people read it and had the vocabulary to talk about it.
Rather than just landing one big night of here we are.
Yeah, exactly. And the flip side of that is that with social media and things like Twitter, we also have more conduits in which to have these conversations. So when you have a show like Breaking Bad that's out right now, for instance, mm-hmm. And that people, you know, can only watch by watching it once a week when it's on because it's just come out, you have at the one time this intensified real-time water cooler around that, and then this more book-like discussion that is evolving around shows like Netflix. So just the ways that we talk about television are being pushed by technology in really interesting and still unpredictable ways.
Different waves and cross currents of interaction and response and discussion. Willa, James, please stand by. Diane, let's go to our callers, Fayetteville, Arkansas. Diane, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What do you think?
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
My comment is about last night's Emmy Awards, and I have to say I agree with all of you when I say it was a very weird show, and I did switch over immediately
to
Breaking Bad.
Okay.
I felt like Jeff Daniels, I've actually never even heard of the show that he won for, so when I heard that Bryan Cranston didn't win, I was sick, because I think that his level of work on Breaking Bad, especially this last season, was just outstanding. I mean, we've got one episode left, and I am blown away by the growth of his character and the writing on that show, and I think well-deserving for the Emmy for Best for Outstanding Show, obviously, for Outstanding Drama.
Which it got. But where was his trophy? He got robbed. Diane, I appreciate your call. I mean, Willa, there it is. As you know, it's on HBO, The Newsroom. It's not like it's a secret, but in this new fragmented world of television, and Diane's into TV, but she's never even heard of the show that wins the top prize for Best Actor Drama.
Well, it's interesting, you know, because I also watched Breaking Bad last night, and part of the reason that I did it and didn't do it this morning was because I was really worried that I wouldn't be able to not find out what happened.
Yeah.
You know, like I would have had to
somebody
not go on
slip.
The computer.
Yeah.
Right. So, obviously, there's these shows that everybody is speaking about, and Breaking Bad has this real feel of that right now in a way that, you know, is sort of rare. It usually happens as the shows are ending. But, you know, it's funny because my particular Twitter feed, we talk about Newsroom quite a bit, or certainly when it started, there was a lot of harping on it. That's maybe faded out. I think the truth is that most people who watch television and don't do it for a living only watch shows that they like. So Breaking Bad is a much better show than Newsroom, you know?
So, actually,
it's funny about Bryan Cranston, though, because you know that that clip you played of him from the very beginning of the show where he said,
on the red carpet,
you know, it's so interesting because Walt's so gray.
Yeah.
That's an amazing example of an actor not having any idea what character they're playing, which is just that Walt is not gray, you know? Like, that's a really bad guy, and that's what's amazing about that show.
Yeah.
And it's so technicolor, not gray at all.
And yet he does it so well, even from right there. Jessica in Madison, Wisconsin. Jessica, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just had a quick comment.
Yeah.
I did not watch the Emmys. Why? Because I'm going to internet stream today parts that I think would be most interesting.
There
in
you
a sense,
go.
Than watching the Emmys.
Right. And why not? That's how everybody's watching everything on TV practically these days, Jessica.
Right, exactly. And that's how I watch all those shows, is I wait for someone to like it or tell me about it, and then I go look it up.
But, okay, so that's nice. It's convenient. But it also means when you show up at work or, you know, head down to the store and meet friends, you're not going to know what happened last night. Do you care? Do you miss the water cooler conversation that everybody was in on when, I don't know, it's not that, you know, a decade ago, we were still locked in this, all in the same schedule, more or less.
No, because actually everyone that I'm, you know, I'm pretty young, so everyone I'm interacting with is kind of doing the same thing, and we're treating it, like one of your guests said, more like a book review rather than, you know, TV watching night to night.
Right. You're swimming right in your stream, and there are so many streams. Love it, Jessica. Thank you for that. Mike in Decatur, Illinois. Mike, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I would agree that we are in a golden age of television right now, and I'd like to suggest an additional formula to that golden age, in addition to the anti-hero and high violence, high patriarchal sort of formula, I think we also owe a great debt of gratitude to the West Wing and Aaron Sorkin from a generation before this era, sort of this pull back the curtain, behind the scenes look at an alternate universe that all of us sort of wonder about, and then the writers and the actors give us a window into imagining what it might be in there. I wonder what your guests would have to say about that.
I mean, we've really seen a string of those, haven't we? I mean, the he had the West Wing, Sopranos, the mob, Mad Men, the advertising world back then, Orange is the New Black, prison, or meth labs. That does seem to be a model. How about it, Jim? That has been very intriguing for lots of people. Get inside, get behind.
Yeah, and you know, and I think when you go back to the 90s and before that, you can see in a lot of broadcast networks, sort of pre-Sopranos shows, that kind of precursor to what would become some of the guiding principles of, you know, this age of television, which, you know, in something like The West Wing or NYPD Blue, say, would be that television doesn't need to just be mindless entertainment, that you could, you know, somebody like Aaron Sorkin, who was a writer with an established movie career and credits and respect, could see television as a place where you could actually engage with issues and things that mattered and, treat them seriously while also being entertaining. And, you know, I think that you know, plus the idea of sort of, you know, peeling back the curtain on another world was an appeal to that, and something that carries forward in a lot of these HBO and other shows that in other ways are very different in temperament from The West Wing.
Will, I wonder if there's some kind of Heisenberg or effect here. Maybe that's the wrong term. The guys on the big winner with the comedy show would know. But as we have all this freedom on the cable channels and streaming, certainly to do all kinds of big dramas, can you have a West Wing anymore? Something of that scale on network television that has that kind of resources thrown into it, that kind of ambition. But because it's still network, it has to work within those constraints around language and subject matter. Is that part of what – does that drive those off of network TV, that scale and quality?
Well, I do think it is much harder just by comparison to be that sort of show on a network, and that most people who are making a show that was sort of ambitious as The West Wing would prefer probably to pitch it to a premium or, you know, a premium cable channel at this point. But you can see the networks trying to do this. I mean, I think a show like Hannibal on NBC, which a lot of people really love, but I don't love, but I think is very thoughtful and very beautifully made. Or a show like The Following, which I think is pretty reprehensible, but is it also sort of serious on Fox, are these shows that are sort of trying to react to what they can do on cable, trying to be about sort of these larger, very life and death themes, have a lot of violence in them, you know, are trying to sort of be an antidote to that. Because it does, you know, it does feel like, you know, cable has, that's where everything interesting is happening. I mean, I think the most effective show that way is, you know, something like The Good Wife on CBS, which is extremely grown up and really smart. It has this procedural element, but it's sort of, it seems like it's making, it's doing what it needs to do in a network framework.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Emmys and where TV is headed in this new season and well beyond. It's headed off in all kinds of directions. What do you see going on? How have your expectations changed with all the new options out there? What do you want? Where? When do you want it? And do screens get bigger and smaller? Does TV just get bigger? Does it become omnipresent? Willa Paskin is with us from Slate, TV critic there. James Poniewozik is with us from Time Magazine. He's got the Tuned In blog on culture and society there. I want to ask about some of the new shows coming up. We've got all kinds of ways of delivering them to you. Here's one. It's network, a Fox comedy, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Former SNL cast member Andy Samberg plays the talented but childish detective Jake Peralta. with the Brooklyn Police. And here's a scene where fellow detective Amy Santiago, played by Melissa Fumero, catches him goofing off at the crime scene, pretending to be a movie star cop.
This job is eating me alive. I can't breathe anymore. Spent all these years trying to be the good guy, the man in the white hat. I'm not becoming like them. I am them.
Hey, what are you doing, weirdo?
I'm doing the best speech from Donnie Brasco.
Get it together, man, okay?
Okay, Jim Willett, what about on the networks? We'll look at the different streams of stuff coming in here, but among networks, I don't know, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, what else is out there? What's great? What will you avoid, Jim?
You know, it's funny you play that clip from Brooklyn Nine-Nine because, you know, I did want to mention, I mean, I will preface all this by saying, you know, I sort of feel particularly with comedies, you really need to see several episodes before you get a sense
before you know.
Of where it's developing and how good it's going to, you know, as usual with new network fall shows, we've seen in most cases just one, maybe a couple of episodes of some mm-hmm. of these new shows. That said, although, you know, critics like us are sort of, you know, deputized nowadays to dump on the old-fashioned broadcast networks, one thing that even in recent years with the ascendance of cables, that networks have shown that they are still capable of doing and doing well and intelligently and brilliantly is comedy. You know, some of the best and smartest sitcoms in recent years, you know, there are good ones on cable, but, you know, have also still been on the broadcast networks. Parks and Recreation, one of the best shows on television right now. It has a fantastic debut episode coming out on Thursday, which I recommend everyone catch. And Brooklyn Nine-Nine comes from one of its creators. It has that sense. I don't want to overpraise Brooklyn Nine-Nine off the bat because, you know, I thought the pilot was good. It didn't mm-hmm. blow me away, but it does have a very sort of well-realized sense that the creators know the characters well and know their voice, which I think is the most important thing in a new sitcom. And has a sense that, you know, from that it could really grow into, you know, just an environment that you enjoy hanging out in, which I think is very important to network sitcoms. But, you know, I think, you know, we've seen in recent years, like, you know, the networks don't have to be creative second cousins to cable. When you look at a show like Parks and Recreation or, say, you know, 30 Rock, which, you know, just went off the air earlier this year, mm-hmm. Those are, you know, some of the smartest shows on television. And, you know, it's there's no network content restrictions that says that networks, you know, can't do humor that's as intelligent as anything on cable. Those shows show that. It just doesn't always happen.
Will, across the spectrum, comedy, drama, you name it, what do you see coming or not coming in this fall season, network-wise?
I mean, I am. There was a couple shows that I thought I would like to watch a couple more of them, and then maybe they would get good.
Please name them.
You know, that I... What? Sorry.
Please name them. Maybe we'll tune
please
in.
Name them. Yeah, sure. I also thought Brooklyn Nine-Nine was promising. There's a show called Trophy Wife, which has a pretty unfortunate name, but is an ABC sitcom about a woman who gets married to a man, actually Josh Lyman from The West Wing, and he has two ex-wives and a bunch of kids, and it's sort of about being that woman. And I thought that show also really clearly knew who its characters were and had a voice and seemed very polished. You know, I'd like to see more of that. I even thought that tonight there's a sitcom starting on CBS from Chuck Lorre, who's the guy who does Big Bang Theory and Two and a Half Men and Mike and Molly sitcoms, which I don't particularly enjoy. And he has a show called Mom that stars Allison Janney, also of The West Wing, and Anna Faris. And I thought that show I would like to see more of it because I thought the first episode was surprisingly dark and cranky and not at all what you would expect for a sitcom on CBS that has a laugh track.
What's it about,
so, Mom? It's about a single mother who is a recovering alcoholic who works as a waitress, and her relationship with her own recovering drug addict mother, who's played by Allison Janney. Okay. And I mean, you know, there's jokes. It's a funny show, or it wants to be a funny show. But that is obviously a really serious premise, you know. And it didn't soften it quite as much as I was expecting it to.
Let's go beyond networks. Cable, new Showtime series, Masters of Sex, is coming out. Follows the story of William Masters, Virginia Johnson, Masters and Johnson, the researchers who transformed the science of human sexuality by observing people in the act in a laboratory. Michael Sheen and Lizzie Kaplan. Here's a scene. Hospital head Dr. Mills, Bill Lane, rejects Masters' proposal to begin sex research as pure smut. Here's Masters first.
I simply want to answer the question, what happens to the body during sex?
By using live subjects, flopping around on beds.
Flopping.
Bill, why are you doing this? Your practice is the envy of every doctor in this hospital.
My practice is a revolving door of cripples, women, disappointed, confused, even tortured by sex. They're desperate for help. And do you know what advice I have to offer? Get a divorce. Get used to it or cheat.
Let psychiatrists help those women. It's not medicine.
It is medicine. And I am so far out in front of it, I'm the only one who sees it.
Will, it sounds like some pretty serious talk about sex. What do you make of this one?
It's actually very good. I don't think it's quite... I've seen the first three, and they sent the first six, so I have three more to watch.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was, you know, impeccable and amazing. I'm not dying to see the next episode, but I thought it was really smart, that some of the performances were really great, and that it's about this really, really interesting subject. I mean, one of the most sort of interesting aspects about it is the Michael Sheen character, who plays William Masters. He's really uptight about sex himself. Mm-hmm. And so it's sort of like there's a lot of really interesting stuff that's happening in it, in addition to, you know, the science aspect. There's just the interpersonal things are really, really well done.
Jim, what's coming from cable that you like?
Well, I would second the recommendation of Masters of Sex. This fall is a lot heavier on network debuts than it is a lot of the most interesting cable stuff premiered earlier this year. But one thing that I would just add a little bit to about Masters of Sex, which I have watched the six episodes of and I think is really promising, is that it goes back to the very good point that Willa made earlier about how we've seen a lot of fantastic anti-hero dramas in the past decade or so, The Sopranos, Breaking Bad, and so on, but that does tend to become kind of shtick after a while. Mm-hmm. The violent, troubled guy with the baseball bat or whatever that, you know, you just need to understand the human inside that dark, angry exterior. And Masters of Sex, I think, is an example of cable doing something that I would like to see it do more of in ambitious shows, which is to find stakes in something else, you know, something besides crime and enforcers knocking guys around with baseball bats or whatever. You know, it's about sex, but it's not sex in the sense of, you know, oh, we're going to show you a bunch of sex because this is pay cable and that's one of the benefits you get, although there is plenty of that on there. But it's about sex as a social phenomenon. And, you know, there's a big theme in the show of how knowledge about sexuality or the lack thereof affects a society and social change. You know, and what does it do to relationships among men and women when you have, you know, a lot of misinformation about there about why, you know, say women don't enjoy sex because they're frigid or something like that. And how does it tend to change society and empower people when they learn more? I think those are all really potentially fruitful ideas. Yeah. And it's a bit of a shift of gears for an ambitious cable series. And so, you know, great on them for trying that.
And it sounds like a non-exploitive way of going at that. I do want to raise, I mean, in all this TV change, that there's the strain of folks who are concerned about where it has taken a lot of shows. Let me just read some of our comments to you from Facebook, Twitter, online here. Marilena says, golden age of television, really? Violence, vulgarity, lawlessness, all the good shows are coming from the BBC, thank God for Netflix, and I'm not religious, she writes. Mike says, I'm sure I'm not alone. I seldom watch TV anymore. It seems most well-made, high-quality shows now feel they must meet a quota of obscenities and foul language. And on Facebook, we asked, you know, what do you want from TV now? And lots of replies. But Nina says, less murder, less portrayal of men as pedophiles and rapists, stronger families where parents are smart and caring, teens who dare to make countercultural choices, and fewer zombies. What about this sort of, I don't know, the moral character, where things stand in that sort of racy versus family-oriented? Where are we headed in this very diverse world, Jim, in terms of what people can expect?
Well, I've got two reactions to that. I mean, there's part of me that wants to say, well, what if I were to say, what golden age of novels? Philip Roth is filthy. Have you seen what that guy does in Sabbath Theater? You know,
yes.
And so, you know, I think that that is partly an outgrowth of TV maturing as a medium and, you know, seeing itself as having the freedom and license to do some of the same things about, you know, disturbing characters in extreme situations that novels have done for a long time. I mean, you know, Raskolnikov was the Walter White of his time, you know, when Dostoevsky was writing.
But there was the time when the TV was just very likely on in some common room in the house, and it had to be or was just as non-offensive as white bread because everybody, grandma, everybody was passing by.
And that's sort of a carryover from that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're moving from the past time of TV operating on the principle of least objectionable content to TV being diverse and targeted at much more specific interests and being ambitious about it in some ways. But the result is that, you know, a lot of it is not necessarily for everyone. Now I will say conversely, though, that I do sympathize with the idea that, like, TV does not have to be about, and no fiction needs to be about dark and horrible things in order to be serious and intelligent. Another example, Will pointed out The Good Wife. Another example, I think, in recent years of a really, really brilliant drama that network television can do content-wise was Friday Night Lights, which was a show that was, you know, much more heroic than anti-heroic and you know, even sort of, you know, all-Americana in some ways. But that was just, a brilliantly deep study of its characters' lives in a way that fit within network content restrictions. So, you know, I would be glad to see, you know, a little more, you know, non-decadent stuff like that out there, too. I'd like to see all of it.
I mean, it's not like Network is all. I mean, you can find your complaints there as well. Dads, a new sitcom, has drawn some. Co-workers here, played by Seth Green and Giovanni Ribisi, are complaining about their fathers, their dads, when they're interrupted here by an Asian colleague, played by Brenda Song.
Well, you're lucky your dads are American. My dad beat me with a math book till I was 16.
Well, see, there you go. That's exactly why we need your help on Friday when we pitch to the Chinese investors.
Well, because of my intimate knowledge of Chinese culture?
No, because you're going to dress up like a sexy Asian schoolgirl.
I can't do that.
Oh, you can. Sure you can. Here, practice with me.
Off they go. They've got some brickbats for that, Willa. But you hear the comments that we got in the question kind of about where's the safe terrain?
Well, what's interesting about Dads, for example, is that Fox is making that show because they want it to be in safe terrain. You know, like that is a show that is really modeled on the huge hit CBS sitcoms, Two and a Half Men, Two Broke Girls, that are really raunchy and sexually provocative and racist sort of in a very similar way. So that is kind of like a play for a sort of meat and potatoes.
That's now our meat and potatoes. Yeah, that's what it is now.
You know, and so that's – so, you know, that's not better, obviously, but that's sort of an old-fashioned thing. I mean, I think, you know, the Friday Night Lights example is a great one. And, you know, there's a show on NBC called Parenthood from one of the men who was running Friday Night Lights. That's great and sweet and lovely. And it, like Friday Night Lights, it doesn't have a huge audience. I mean, a lot of these shows, the audience is so fragmented that networks are in such a pickle about who wants to watch, what wants to see what, that there is sort of a incentive to like make a show have something seem so much more dramatic, because if it's just a sweet show, no one's going to tune in.
I want to ask about the sort of cutting edge out there, Hulu and all that. Here's a little bit from The Wrong Mans. It's a co-production of Hulu, and now it's got the BBC, so there's traditional in it as well. Comes out in November. Digital-only distribution centers on two office workers caught up in a criminal conspiracy. Here's a bit where one answers a phone at the scene of a car crash. Here's that moment.
Hello?
Where are you now? Where are you?
No, it's not.
Let me make this quite clear. If you are not here by 5 o'clock, we will kill your wife.
From the BBC and Hulu, digital only. I mean, what is TV now, Jim? If digital only? Is it anything that's visual and has a... and people will sit down and look at? Or walk and look
TV, at? TV now is really sort of a catch-all phrase that simply means, extended storytelling through video. A lot of these distinctions that we make less and less sense to people nowadays, and will probably make none to my children who, you know, have grown up watching TV on devices and on TiVo and probably have very little sense of what channel, quote unquote, anything that they watch is on. You know, I think a nice thing about this is that the more mediums that you have to produce TV or whatever you want to call it, like Hulu, the more you're free to take chances, you know, because one thing that has limited TV in the past in the kind of chances it could take and stories it could tell was that even a low-watch TV show still had to get millions of people watching it. If you can make things that are a little more narrow and more specific, you hopefully, you know, going down the road, have a little more license, too, which is very exciting.
Willa, if I stage a play, a theatrical, a play, and I make a video and it's online, is that TV?
It wasn't the 50s.
No. Yeah. I mean, I think that it is obviously expanding in a huge way. But a YouTube video is a YouTube video, and I mean, you can watch it in a lot of different ways. But I don't think the boundaries are quite so blurred that just, you know, the viral video of someone falling off their chair is quite TV in the same way that a really big collaborative project that has a script or has a lot of people, you know, even reality shows have scripts now.
Well, just wait and watch this space. We're up against the clock, but Willa Paskin with Slate, very grateful to you for joining us this hour. Thank you so much for your time, Willa.
Thanks so much for having me.
And James Poniewozik at Time Magazine. Wonderful to have you, James. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks a lot. It was a great talk.
We'll go out a little bit of a Breaking Bad theme here. Finale on its way. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.